Okay, I'm glad to be here, and I thank also the Fields Institute for giving me this opportunity to participate in this series of workshops and lectures. So here I'll talk about the specificity of derivation of fluid equations for plasmas. I will not present anything mathematically rigorous, but try to give you a hint of what are the main problems and difficulties in the area of plasma physics. And moreover, I will concentrate mostly on collisionless situations. So my lecture will be divided into three different talks, but I will plan to talk about first a derivation for the one-point distribution function, which is the analog for plasma of the Maxwell of the Boltzmann equation we have seen this morning, but with the specificity of the coupling with electromagnetic fields. After that, I will speak about what are the problems in fluid descriptions, what kind of assumptions one has to make in order to have valid fluid descriptions in both collisional and collisionless situations. Show the derivation of B-fluid equations specific for electron ions plasma, and then explain what can be done to go further in the simplification to get monofluid descriptions. And I will probably stop here today. And then later on I'll talk about more precisely what are the challenges in describing correctly the pressure, which is the main problem in plasma, basically. So basically, what happens for pressure equations in collisionless situations. And then modelization of heat fluxes. And then in the end, try to show that in some specific situations where asymptotics can be made, well, semi-rigorously, one can obtain exact closures without having to make any assumptions directly from Brazov-Maxwell equations if we restrict ourselves to the dynamics of weakly nonlinear waves at large scales. So this is an example where just pure calculation can lead to fluid equations with an exact closure. And so that will close the lectures. I want to here give that all the materials presented in the beginning, well, basically chapter 1, 2, and 6A, are compiled from three books that I have used intensively, the Kral and Trivial Peace, the Akiza book, and the Nicholson book. The references are at the end of the talk. So what can we do when we have a collection of n particles? So I will describe basically nr particles of species R, so this can be electrons and ions of different species, which are at position xi, and which have velocity vi, and for which the total acceleration, I will come back to the denomination total acceleration a little bit later on, is given by this simple acceleration term that was used intensively by Pierre in the previous talks to describe particle individual particle motion. So for this, why do I call it total? Because you can have external fields and you can have the fields produced by the motion of the charged particles. So both are included in these definitions of ET and BT. So when you have this situation of a plasma composed of all these particles, you can construct the density of the system in the sixth n dimensional phase space, and it's at this point just a formal construction. You take the product of the delta functions of xi minus xi of t and vi minus vi of t. And you can write a very simple equation, which is Liouville equation, which is nothing else at this stage than the equation of motion for all the individual particles. Okay, this is equivalent to saying that d by dt of xi equal vi and d of vi of t by dt is ai, which is the acceleration. So this is equivalent. So this system describes this collection of n particles, provided you couple these equations to the Maxwell equations, which are rewritten here in terms of total fields, which are driven by charge densities, which can formally exist in the plasma at any space and time, which is often neglected in a lot of situations. And you have also external, you have a charge current and a d by dt, 1 over c d by dt term of the electric field, which is often neglected. So this is a horrible equation, this Euler equation, because it lives in a 6n dimensional phase space. So mathematically and physically, nothing very interesting can be done unless we make some simplifications. So that's what I'm going to try to present here. So first of all, a very simple remark is that the divergence in the v velocity space of this acceleration is zero, and so it is possible to rewrite the Euler equation in conservative form. So now this term here, obviously, is equivalent. This form is equivalent to the previous form if you make this remark that the acceleration has this particular form, E plus V cross B. So now, another very important conceptual step is to jump from this phase density function to an equation for the probability density, F, which I call capital F instead of curly F. So the difference is basically that you take realizations of this collection of particles, and you take many realizations, and you average over these realizations. And so you have a probability density now that the plasma is composed of particles all at positions I, xi and velocity vi. So now it is quite easy to verify that the equation for the probability density function is the same as the equation for the density itself, just defined as the product of these delta functions. So as I said, it is very difficult to use this equation because it contains all the information. It's too much information to use. So what can do is to define one particle probability distribution functions. And in order to do that, it is convenient to just integrate this probability density function. Yes?
I have an incorrect here.
Yeah.
Because the Euler equation holds when you know the acceleration is given by the field, and the field has coupled to the actual particle motion. So take two different realizations with initial data, the certain field will not be the same, and therefore you will be adding different vector fields or averaging different vector fields in the Euler equation. So it's not clear to me how you write down the vector fields which appear in the average Euler equation, so to speak. Is the question?
Mm, yeah, I think, well, I mean, the same procedure of averaging over the realization has to be done on the fields themselves too. So your question is, what is the Maxwell equation the same once you make this? I presume I have not gone into that detail, but I presume so.
Well, part of the problem is also that UV is not linear in the bare field.
Yeah. It's not linear.
Therefore, the averaging does not carry over directly.
So probably in the case of dilute plasma, this problem can be circumvented. I cannot really assure you that you have not corrective terms in the Maxwell equations for the case of a very dense plasma, for example, for which this nonlinear coupling might be effective, but I'm not sure about that. So this is something I can try to look over. I'm sorry, but I cannot really answer the equation in more details than that. But from the literature I've looked at, nothing was mentioned about that. But I must admit that we concentrate on plasma, which are dilute. So the case where you have strong interactions between the particle and the fields is probably more complicated, and probably have to stay at more at the level where you describe things But I don't know. I'm not sure about that. I'm sorry. Anybody knows in the audience the answer to this question? No? That's a very interesting point.
I'll comment about it tomorrow in my lecture then.
Okay. Okay, thank you. So that's good, we have interaction between the different lectures. It's a lively course. Okay. So at this point, then, I said you integrate the distribution function over all particles and field except the first one, and you are led to define the one particle distribution function normalized by NR, which is the density, meaning the number of particles divided by the volume occupied by the system. And you can also define two-point and n-point probability distribution functions with the following formulas. NR and S, F2 equal capital NR, capital NS, the integral of F over all the positions starting at 3 to n, and all velocities at 3 to n. So now the question is, what kind of equation can we derive for F1? So if you integrate Liouville equation over the spatial and velocity coordinates of all but one particle, you obtain this equation without any problem. But here, it is interesting to discuss the last term, because that's the one which is not closed in a closed form for this equation. So in order to do that, we separate the acceleration into, as I mentioned before, external acceleration, which is provided by external electric and magnetic field, plus the coupling between particles, which is just the sum of terms of the form Aij, sum over all the particles, so interaction between one particle and all the other particles. So if you do that and substitute this in this last term of the Liouville equation, what you obtain is that you separate this easily into an external acceleration times d by dv1 of n f1, which is correct because it has the right form and it's closed in f1, plus another term which can be written in this form, where the summation here is on the species of, I mean, the type of particles. It can be different ion particles, different species. Times this quantity here, nr minus 1, refers to the fact that all the particles of the same species being the same, this contribution here is n times minus 1, because you don't calculate the interaction between the particle with itself, of course. So it's nr minus 1 times this term, which involves the two-body distribution function. So at this stage, you see that the equation is enclosed, of course. And so that's the main problem of in this business, is to close this hierarchy. So if you define now, an interesting definition is not F2, but it's G, which is defined as the difference between F2 and the product of F1s. So this is also in the turbulence community referred to as cumulence, for example. And so this two-point correlation function now can be replaced in the former equation. And the last term that I showed before here can be written here in this form, where you have the first term, d by dv1, where I have substituted the product of first-order distribution functions, can be integrated on S, on DXS and DVS times this acceleration, multiplied by F1 of X1 and V1. And you see that this quantity can be recognized, I will come to that later, as something known, plus this term that involves the correlation between particles. And that's the main difficulty. So, the quantity I said can be recognized, this quantity here, is the ensemble average acceleration experienced by particle 1 due to all of the particles. Okay? And so, assuming that nr is large compared to 1, you have a large number of particles, this term is like 1, then this term is split into two contributions, one coming from this ensemble average acceleration and one coming from the correlation. And what you are led to is to write the Liouville equation for the one particle distribution function into an equation like this form, which involves mean fields here. So that's the collective fields that act on the particle in a plasma, plus, on the right-hand side, a collision term, which involves this correlation between particles. So this is the so-called Boltzmann equation for plasma, or also can write it as collisional Vlasov equation if you want. Vlasov meaning an equation for F1 where you neglect the collision terms. So it has many names. And the goal now is to try to see what can we do with this collisional term in the first part of the lecture, and in the second part I will drop it to zero. So I'm using the fact that François Golz gave a very nice introduction about all this business of collisions in the case of a gas with hard spheres, to skip a few introductions about the phenomenology of collisions, even though for plasma collisions are much more complicated because they involve Coulomb interactions, and I won't have time to go in the details of Coulomb interactions. So as I said, I will be very sketchy on that part of collisional interactions. So what are the equations for the Maxwell equations for this average field, this ensemble average accelerations? They are given by these average equations, which involves the so-called collective fields. So the collisional term is just here rewritten in this form with the G correlation function. So to simplify notations, if I will drop the superscript 1 because I'm now going to concentrate mostly on one-body distribution function, so I don't need to consider this superscript anymore, and I will drop this average here on the fields. So, as I said, there is a whole hierarchy of equations that can be written for the n-body distribution functions, and this is a so-called BBGKY hierarchy. So for Bogoliugov, Green, I forgot the names, sorry, but you... Born Green, yeah, okay. and so this business of closing the hierarchy is very important for dense plasmas where you cannot really make too drastic simplifications, and I'm not going to discuss any more the details of going further into this hierarchy. However, I will discuss what Pierre-Louis started to introduce in his talk, is the definition of a plasma. Well, in what situation can we say that the plasma can be described by the one-body distribution function only? And it's possible if the ratio between the potential interaction, the energy of interaction between particles is much smaller than the energy, the kinetic energy of particles. So if this ratio G is small enough, then you can close this hierarchy by saying that the correlation between particles becomes tinier and tinier as you go along. Triple collisions are much smaller than double binary collisions, and four-order collisions even smaller, etc. So that the key to close this hierarchy is this plasma parameter here. And this plasma parameter, as Pierre mentioned, can be written as the inverse of the number of particles in the Debye sphere. So Pierre already introduced what is the Debye length. I will just here say a few words about the derivation of this term to show that actually if there are enough particles in the Debye sphere around a given test particle, Coulomb interaction is shielded. It means that the interaction becomes exponentially small and short range. And how can we see that? Well, consider a static electron ion cloud in the vicinity of a test particle of charge QT, and write the equation for the electric potential. You have the Laplacian of phi equal, so the source, which is minus 4 pi, sum of all particles of QI and I, minus the source due to this test particle. And if you assume that you are close to thermal equilibrium, then the density of particles are given by this just this exponential of minus qi phi over t, with this term being small as a result of this approximation here. And then the equation becomes, the Poisson equation just becomes a linear equation like this. Laplacian of phi minus a coefficient times phi equals zero. And the solution is obviously of this form of qt over t times exponential of minus r over lambda d, where lambda d is by definition the bi length. So actually here lambda d is defined as the average of the bi sphere of electrons and ions. So that's the quick hint of the duration of the bi screening length. Yes. It's a mystery. So this exponential is the behavior at large distance, and at short distance, of course, you should have the regular Coulomb potential. Thank you for pointing out this error. So it's so obviously one of at small distance and exponential at large distance. So now, under the assumption that the free particle correlations are negligible, that the plasma is spatially homogeneous, and that the two-point particle correlation function relaxes much faster than the one-point distribution functions, people have obtained equations which are have the name of Lenard-Balescu equations, which describe the collisional, the two-particle collisions in more details, taking into account the Coulomb interactions. I'm not going to describe it. I'm just quoting it. It's very complicated. I don't think in a one-hour lecture I can even make any interest of trying to address this equation. I just mention here that there are a lot of simplifications of the Lenard-Balescu equation. Two of them I will mention here. The Fokker-Planck equation, which describes collisions in a very simple way by two terms, which are a dynamic friction term here and a diffusion term in velocity space, two derivatives here, one derivative here. These two effects tend to balance each other and compensate exactly for the Maxwellian distribution here. So that that's something which is very often used. And even a cruder approximation for the collision integral is the so-called Crook collision term, which actually just says that if collisions are frequent enough, then the distribution function should relax to Maxwellian. And so the difference between the distribution function and the Maxwellian actually describe the collisional process that leads to this convergence. So, but this collisional form, the Crook collision term, is very crude, and actually it fails to reproduce the fact that distribution tails, the tail of the distribution function, relax much later than the central part of the distribution function. So it's kind of the poor man's collision term, but we have to be careful to use it. Yeah, tau is independent of V here. It's just the time of typical time during collisions. The Maxwellian distribution function. So, as I said, a precise form of GRS will not be needed in what follows. And so I will now discuss the more like phenomenological issues. So, as I said, correlations vanish when the one-point distribution function is Maxwellian. So in the presence of collisions and in the absence of external fields, then an initial distribution evolves over long times toward a Maxwellian. And this relaxation takes place over a time scale, which is about a tau that I mentioned before, which is the ratio between the mean free path and the thermal velocity of particles. So the definitions here are the same as the ones that François Gauss mentioned this morning. And so this typical time scale of relaxation now depends on the type of particles you consider. And so since the relaxation time scale is proportional to the square root of the particle mass, you rapidly see that it will be different for ions and electrons. And so what is the physical implication of that? It is that the typical time of interactions for ion-ions will be larger than the typical interaction of electron-electrons by a factor square root of mi over me. So since the mass, for example, of a proton divided by a mass of an electron is of the order of 1800, this term is much larger than tau EE. And similarly, the interaction time between electrons and ions is even much larger because it's proportional to almost 2,000 times TEE. So you see that the electron population is the population that will relax first. Then you will have equilibrium between ions, and at last, the equilibrium between ion and electrons. So this allows to define separate temperatures for the different components of the plasma. And at this point, it is then very important to realize that the concept of multi-fluids is possible because of that, because relaxation occurs on different timescales, so it is meaningful to speak about a fluid equation for electrons and a fluid equation for ions. Otherwise, if all particles would be of the same mass, then it would be more complicated. Like, for example, positron electron plasma behave differently. I'm not going at all to discuss about that, electron-positron plasmas. So, what can be said about the case where collisions can be totally neglected? The distribution function obeys the so-called collisionless Boltzmann or Vlasov equation that I rewrite here. And when is it valid? Well, it is also obvious valid when the frequency of the typical perturbation in the systems is large enough compared to the time between collisions, so that you can forget about collisions, basically. So if you have a phenomena which is at a very, very small frequency, occurring very slowly, then during that time you will have enough collisions that you cannot forget about collisions anymore. So Vlasov equation will be valid for kind of rapid phenomena and short-scale phenomena. In the same way, you have to have variations, space variations, which are small enough compared to the collisional mean free path, so that you can forget about collisions. So to give you an order of magnitude, I'm mostly interested by space plasma. And in space plasma, what can you say about, for example, a solar wind? Solar wind, is it a good approximation of the plasma in the solar wind to take the Vlasov equation and forget completely collisions? Well, I mean, the mean free path of a typical particle in the solar wind is about the distance between the sun and the earth. So for the solar wind, obviously, you can forget about collisions. Of course, if you go down now in the sun atmosphere, go down, down, and down, then you have a lot of collisions. The plasma is becoming dense, and then fluid approximations like MHD will become valid. But outside the corona, between corona and the Earth, I mean, basically you can forget completely about collisions. So Vlasov equations. What about the basic property of Vlasov equations? As mentioned before, this morning, you have conservation of total number of particles here, and also the conservation of positivity. You start with a positive distribution function at t equals 0, then for all x and v, it will remain so for all times. And it better do, because it is a probability density function, so it has to be positive. And what about the equilibrium solutions of Vlasov equations? They are a lot of equilibrium solutions of Vlasov equations. In fact, many more than the exact collisional equation. So you can have spurious solutions in the Vlasov equation that do not describe the original system of n-body distribution functions. So careful, one has to be careful a little bit at this point. But for example, what can you build? You can build a distribution function that depends on constant of motion of the particles. So if you write a distribution function in terms of A, B, C constants of motions of individual particles, this will be a solution of Vlasov equation, as you can see from the trivial fact that you can write it on characteristic coordinates. And so in that case, you can build at will a lot of equilibrium solutions like that. So now I'm turning to the second point in the talk, which of today, which concerns fluid descriptions. And I will start by hand-waving a little bit. What can we say about validity about fluid descriptions? If we restrict ourselves to saying that fluid equations can only be written in the case where you have collisions, then to describe space plasma, as I mentioned before, you're stuck because you have no collisions in the SolarWind. So no hope of describing ever a fluid behavior for the SolarWind plasma. But it is not quite true because experience proves that actually for a lot of applications, fluid equations give a good job. So why? And the key to that point is the collective fields, which are provided by external magnetic fields. And so what can we say about the validity of a fluid approximation? Well, we can say that it is basically valid when the typical scale of perturbation and the scale of the system, the ratio between the typical scale of perturbation and the scale of the system above which particle get sufficiently mixed is large enough. So it means what? It means that you have to have mixing of particles by any phenomena that you can think of, either collisions or zero motion of particles around magnetic field. And if this mixing is enough to kind of give sense to the definition of mean density and mean velocity, then it is useful to speak about fluid equations. So let's discuss the different parameters in a plasma. Consider a plasma where there is no ambient magnetic field first, just to fix the ideas. So in that case, you have the mean free pass, which is the basic the ratio of the thermal velocity by the collision frequency. And you can also build another length, capital L, which is the ratio of the thermal velocity divided by the typical period of oscillations you're considering. In that case, we can link L to the distance that a particle travels during a wave period. So these are two typical scales that you can build in the system. And a local hydrodynamic theory will be, roughly speaking, valid if either the typical wavelength of a perturbation is very large compared to the mean free path. This is the usual case. So many collisions during a wave period. Or also, in some cases, if the wavelength of your perturbation is very large compared to this length capital L, which is the distance that the particle travels during a wave period. And in that case, you can assume that there is almost no collisions, meaning the collision frequency is much smaller than the frequency you're considering, but particles move very slowly. And if they move very slowly, it's typically a cold plasma. So if it's called plasma, it means that the pressure is very small. And since the whole business in deriving fluid equation is to close the hierarchy of fluid equation and to have a closure that describes how the pressure behaves, if you can say that the pressure is negligible, it's a cold plasma, then you're done. I mean, you have closed your system. So that's why cold plasma are very good, because they can allow to formally, at least, I'm not speaking about mathematical derivations here, but at least formally, provide a good framework for deriving fluid equations. So in the case, the first case, there is no condition on the phase velocity of the wave, and also no closure problem, because collisions ensure that the distribution function stays close to a Maxwellian. And in that case, if you can neglect the deviation with the Maxwellian, then the third order moments of the Maxwellian, which are called heat fluxes, is going to be zero, and then the closure problem disappears. If, in the second case, you look at the validity in terms of phase velocity of the waves compared to thermal velocity of particles, you see that the hydrodynamic theory will be valid for rapid waves, meaning for waves which have a phase velocity much larger than the thermal velocity of particles. And then adiabatic theory, they are possible. But if the wave starts to move more slowly, then you have to, and then we'll mention that later on, to take into account resonance between particles and the wave. So now let's consider the case where magnetic field is non-zero. That's a very interesting case because it provides another length scale in the system. So in the direction along the ambient field, the conditions are the same as in the absence of magnetic field. Obviously, a particle moving along the magnetic field do not feel the magnetic field, so you are back to the previous case. But, however, in the direction perpendicular to the magnetic field, there is a third length that has to be considered. And this length is called the gyration radius, introduced by Pierre this morning, and that involves the ratio between the thermal velocity and the cyclotron frequency, which is capital omega QB divided by MC. So this length now can be compared to the mean free path. If it is much larger than the mean free path, then it means that collisions play a big role, and then you don't need to decouple perpendicular and parallel motions. And in that case, the conditions of validity of the hydrodynamic approximations are the same as in the absence of magnetic field. You don't need to consider magnetic field to at this level. Collisions will do the job. If, on the other hand, the gyration radius is much smaller than the collision than the mean free path, then it means that collisions are infrequent, and RB plays the role of mean free path in the perpendicular directions. So now you decouple your system, and collisions are absent, but still in the perpendicular direction to the magnetic field. It's as if you had collisions, because this gyration ratio here actually mixes particles efficiently. So you have to consider now the validity conditions by separating parallel and perpendicular directions. So for example, if you have for the parallel and perpendicular directions condition like this, if for in the parallel direction magnetic field doesn't play a role, so if the mean free path is very small compared to the typical length scales, or if the capital L, the distance traveled by one particle in wave period, is much smaller than the typical wavelength, then you can apply free theory. And similarly, in the perpendicular directions, you have to compare now the duration radius to lambda perp, or this capital L to lambda perp. And so we are led to consider three different cases for the validity of the Freed approximations. You have to compare the frequency of your typical oscillations to the frequency of the gyro motion to the frequency of collisions. So in the case where collision frequency is very small, but where the typical frequency of gyration is smaller than the the perturbation frequency, then this is a case of a cold plasma, and the conditions is that in both directions the phase velocity of the wave have to be larger than the thermal velocity. If, on the other hand, you exchange here omega and capital omega, meaning that the frequency of the perturbation is smaller than the frequency of duration, then the condition is the same in the longitudinal direction, that reduces to the fact that in the perpendicular direction you have to have scales much larger, than the inertial length or the duration length. So a condition of closure, of fluid theory, is that you consider perpendicular lengths large compared to the duration radius. And finally, if you have the other conditions where capital omega is much larger than nu, which is again larger than omega, then on the parallel phase velocity there is no condition, but it is still necessary to have this condition of large scale in the transverse direction. So this is unwaving, but at least it gives basic hints of what kind of plasma we can describe or we cannot describe by fluid theory. So let's now, in this second part, derive the fluid equations formally from the Vlasov equation. And here, to be more complete, I have added here the collision terms. So this is the full system that describes the plasma for the situations where I describe it in terms of one-body distribution functions coupled to Maxwell's equation. And as usual, the charge and masses are designed by Q and M, and very often the displacement current here can be neglected. It cannot be neglected in all situations, like in ionospheric plasmas, for example, where the Allen velocity can reach almost the speed of light. This term has to be kept. But otherwise, in, for example, solar wind plasma, this can be neglected. So you write this equation, the kinetic equation here, as a left-hand side that I call L, and the right-hand side here that I split into two parts. So why do I split it? Because I say collisions are collisions between electron and electrons and electron and ions. Same for ions. There are collisions between ion and electrons and ion and ions. There is no simple relation between IE and IEI. And moreover, I have assumed bilinearity of collision operator. And in fact, due to the long-range nature of the Coulomb interaction, there is a slight logarithmic departure to bilinearity. But I can really forget about this deviation and consider that the collision terms can be split into two terms like this. So as explained this morning by François, this conservation of number of particles, momentum, and energy imply that the integral of the collision operator is zero over the velocity space, that the integral, the sum over the particle species of the integral of the collision operator times typical momentum of particle is zero, and the same thing with the energy of a particle. So I have three conditions here, and also the conditions which are related to the fact that binary collisions between same type of particles conserve momentum and energy. So this is total conservation in the total system, and this is detailed conservation of particles of the same species. So I will not provide you with the algebra, but it is very easy to verify that you can derive a hierarchy of fluid equations for these quantities. The density, which is defined as the integral basically of the distribution functions times mass and density, number density of particles. Hydrodynamic velocity is defined by this formula here, which is the integral of Vf divided by the integral of F. And the pressure tensor, which is basically the product of the distribution function by the tensor V minus UR times V minus UR, where UR is the fluid velocity of the particle of species R. And you can also define, a whole series of fluid moments like this going on, like the heat flux tensor, QR, which is the cubic in terms of velocity differences here. And you can even define higher order moments like R, which will be the fourth order moment. But if I stop here, I can write a system of equations which is exactly a consequence of Lazoff-Maxwell equations. So at this point, there is no approximation, okay? So this is conservation of mass, conservation of momentum, and an equation for the pressure. So what can we say here at this point? I have the notation here that in brackets with a superscript S, I have denoted the sum of a tensor and its trace. So it's a symmetric part. The force acting on particles here is just the Lorentz force and the electric force. I have a gradient of pressure, which is not, this is a divergence of the pressure tensor, which in the case where the pressure tensor is scalar, can be written as the gradient of a scalar quantity, and inertial term here. And in the equation for the pressure tensor, I have appearing here the divergence of the heat flux tensor. So you see that these equations are not closed. Again, you have the same problem as in the BBJKY hierarchy. You can write equations for moments, but you still have to provide a closure to use these equations. I have on the right-hand side extra terms that derive from the presence of collision. And these extra terms are basically the forces which act upon particles due to the collisions with other particles. So, for example, here Re, which due to the fact that you have conservation of momentum is equal to minus Ri. So here on the right-hand side of the momentum equation, and on the right-hand side of the pressure equation, you have a tensor that describes the amount of heat obtained by electrons by unit of time as a result of their collisions with ions, which is again also the opposite of that for ions. So that's a simple set of equations that can be derived exactly from Lazoff-Maxwell equation. What can we say about it? So when collisions dominate, you can make a lot of simplifications because you enter a regime where you do not even need to separate, as I mentioned before, parallel and perpendicular directions with respect to an ambient magnetic field, because collisional processes are dominant over the processes of geomotion of particles. And so at dominant order, you can consider you are close, your distribution function is close to Maxwellian. You have unique temperatures, and the pressure can be split into two terms, a scalar quantity times the unit tensor I, plus a deviation, which is written often pi r, which is a generalized viscosity tensor. So why generalized? Because it doesn't describe only viscous effects due to collisions. So this tensor has a definition of being of zero trace, and describes not only viscous traces, which are proportional to viscosity coefficient times rate of strain tensors, but it also includes terms which are quite unrelated to conventional viscosity, which can be linked to so-called finite Lamar radius corrections, even though the name, the denomination of finite Lamar radius corrections is very well defined in the plasma literature, and is probably a slightly in a slightly more restricted context than the one I present here. But anyway, it's related to corrections to the pressure that will provide dispersion corrections to the equations. They are not dissipative, and they are proportional to 1 over omega, omega being the zero frequency of the particles. So at large enough scales, the viscous terms can be neglected, and the equations for the isotropic scalar pressure reads this, which can be obtained by these equations for P by taking the trace. So taking a trace, you have this very simple form where you have this coefficient 3 half and 5 half, which you can easily combine to give the five-thirds degrees of freedom. And, you know, when you have the particles which have isotropic distributions, you have 3 degrees of freedom, and the heat done by compression due to the pressure is then given by 5/3 times PdV, the usual term, and written in this form, the equation contains not only the heat given by compression, but also the heat given by flux, by divergence of the heat flux tensor, and heat given by viscosity tensor, and also heat given by collisions. So the definition here of this divergence of heat flux tensor can be simplified in this simple approximation where I have an isotropic distribution, because then I don't need to consider the free ranked free tensor. I can define a vector heat flux in this form here, where Q now is basically just the flux of kinetic energy, basically. So this is the equivalent of this term, but now in a simplified framework where I have just isotropy, assumed isotropy of the distribution. This Q is basically the heat generated by collisions, and is written as the contraction of the H that was before, times the unit tensor. And the fact that we have conservation of energy gives you these extra relations, that the sum of heats produced by on electrons and ions is related to the opposite of the force times the velocity of velocity difference, ui minus ue. So it is now possible to go further. And assuming that your distribution function is not purely Maxwellian, try to get equations for deviations to the Maxwellian, and put it back in the collision operator and calculate the corrections. This has led to a system of equations presented in Braginski that I will not describe here, because they are very involved. I mean, they are complicated, a lot of coefficients, a lot of tensors, and if you're interested, I will give you the references. I mean, this is a very complete and very often quoted paper. This is very interesting. And this relates, gives you the closure, basically, in the case. It's like a Chapman and Skog expansion, where you you find relations between the different unknowns here, which is the geoviscous tensor, the heat flux, and the collision terms, in terms of the moments, density, velocity, and temperatures defined previously. So these transport coefficients are well documented now in the literature for plasma. So I think I will have the time to start introducing the further reduction we can make on this multifluid equation. So you've seen here, you have an equation for each particle species, rho r, u r, and in a lot of situations, it is of interest to reduce the description further and get an equation for a monofluid description of plasma. And this is useful because by doing so, you filter processes that will appear at small scales, which are linked to oscillations between electrons and ions, like Langmuir waves. And in most of the cases where you're interested in large-scale phenomena, you don't need to worry about this fine-scale phenomena. And so by doing a description in which you combine electron and ions together into a single fluid, you kind of filter these small-scale behaviors. And the trick to do that is, at this point, very formal. You just define the plasma velocity as being the barycentric velocity. You define that 1 over rho times the sum of rho r u r, so just a basic definition, and the density as being the sum of the densities of each particle species. And you have to be a little bit careful now for the other parameters, like the pressure, for example. Now, I would call the small p and not capital P the pressure of the particle species r, defined in terms of a barycentric velocity, u, and not in terms of the velocity u r of each particle species. Indeed, if you write now the equation for u, you will see that the natural term that arises in the pressure equation is not capital P r, but small p r. Same thing happens for the heat flux. And the relation between capital P and small p is rather trivial. It's given by this equation here. Same for the heat flux tensor. So when you do that, it is easy to verify that the equation for the density has the usual form of the usual mass conservation. Same for the momentum equation. It is useful to note that I have used the fact that the friction forces cancel each other, meaning that Ri and Re are opposite to each other. So when I sum the two equations, they disappear. And so there is no approximation at that level here. Even with collisions, you can write this equation by an exact combination of the two fluid equations. And the tensor that appears here in this divergence of P term is the sum of this small p r. And at this level also, I assume that the J, that is written here, the current, which is defined by the sum of QR now, the integral of VFR, which is the flux of charge of particles, is given by this form and related to the magnetic field by J equal curl B, and by doing so, I neglect the displacement current. So this is very often done in the MHD approximation. So that's basically the so-called MHD approximation. So what can we say about P now? If you want to write an equation for P, you see the equation for capital P was written here. Now I want an equation for small p, which is written in terms of the deviation of the particle velocity with the barycentric velocity and not the deviation from the particle velocity to the fluid velocity u r. So this equation will not be valid anymore, but if you restrict yourself to cases where you have small enough amplitude waves, then you can keep the same equations because the terms that will differ from the previous equations are small in nonlinearity, and for most applications of interest where you want to consider small perturbations, you can restrict yourself to this form of the equation. Otherwise, you have to keep all these corrections, and basically you cannot have a closed formulation in a monofluid system now anymore. So what can you do now to simplify further? You see, I have this equation here. I need now a closure to tell me what will be the equation for the magnetic field. The equation for the magnetic field involves the electric field, and so I have to find the relation between the currents and basically the electric field and velocity fields. In order to do that, I take the difference between the equations. Here, the equation for the moment for the momentum was obtained by taking the sum of these two equations over the two species considered, ions and electrons. Now, if I do the difference between these two equations, I will obviously get the current equation, because Q of a proton is the opposite of the charge of an electron. By doing so, I obtain this equation, which is exact. Again, no approximation, except in this form where I have used the fact that I can model the collisions by a term which will be proportional to the collision frequency times the current, and which has this form, actually, the sum of all particle species of QR over MR times the friction force LR. And this term will be the source of heat due to the Ohm's law, due to the, what is the term again? How do you say that? Resistivity, yeah. I forgot the name. Okay. So when you play a little bit with this equation, what you can do is verify that if you expand in terms of mass of electrons and protons, you have a lot of terms like Me over Mp. And since the ratio here is small, these terms can often be neglected. Same thing, you can use the fact that at dominant order, the plasma is quasi-neutral, at least at large scales. It means that you have as many ions as electrons, so that you have no net charge in the plasma. I mentioned here that now people start to consider cases where the plasma has a global charge, and very interesting phenomena come in these situations, but I'm not going to talk about it. And assuming that, you can simplify this equation for the current into this form here, where, again, you remark that these terms, which are nonlinear advective terms, for small perturbations can be neglected, and you are led now to an approximation of the Faraday equation, which involves now not only the electric field driven by the U cross B terms, which is the equivalent of saying that the velocity now is only given by the electric drift velocity that Pierre reintroduced, but you have also corrective terms that you can actually coupled to the system of fluid equation. And these corrective terms are the Hall term, J cross B term, which basically says that at small enough scales, electrons and ions become decoupled, and this is a dominant order term that results from this decoupling. You have the electron pressure gradients, which is also, I mean, it comes at the same order as the Hall term. And this resistive term, which basically gives the amount of heat produced by collisions due to this resistivity here. The resistivity is defined as eta and related to nu, the collision frequency, in this form. And thus, one has a closed system of equations now, provided we have a closure approximations to express the heat fluxes, because, as I mentioned here, in the equation for the pressure, I still have a term proportional to the divergence of the heat flux tensor. And this is not easy to capture, and so simple closures are obtained in several cases and used very often in, for example, in astrophysics. Closures that are usually obtained are isothermal closures that say that T is constant, or adiabatic closures, which amounts to replace the equation for the pressure by equations of the form d by dt of P over rho gamma equals zero, where gamma is the adiabatic index. And so there is a whole bunch of literature devoted to these special cases, which are valid basically when you have collisions. You can forget about anisotropy due to magnetic field, and where you have simple enough thermal behavior so that you can assume very simple equation of states. I think I will stop here at this point. The next part of the lecture will be devoted to the analysis of the pressure equations here. That, since I have not commented this term, I have done on purpose, I have not commented this term, which provides complication in this system of equation. The next goal will be to describe what can we do with this term and simplify further these equations. Okay, thank you.